masterpieces, basketball, eulogies, all that and more next.
Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island.
Cards Subject to Change is looking for dedicated sponsors. If you or your business would like to join the Cards Subject to Change podcast, hit us up at our official podcast email, cstcpodcast2022@gmail.com.
We're also brought to you by the Four Frequency Sake Podcast Network with new episodes of Cards Subject to Change every Sunday night. Also, this Thursday, by the time this comes out, we will be less than 36 hours away from the 2023 NFL Draft, and you can catch us live on Facebook and YouTube. Also, excuse me, Facebook and Twitter, and also catch us live at Kavanaugh's. This is for fantasy sake and educated ignorance. We'll be hosting our NFL Draftapalooza live from Kavanaugh's 7 p.m. on Thursday. DJ and I will be joined by Hawkeye headquarters at Kavanaugh's for our live draft party. All of us will be analyzing the draft, and Cavies will keep the drinks flowing all night long, and Chevin's Kitchen and Catering will be cooking up some great food to keep everyone's stomachs from growling. Also, we're going to be giving away a pellet grill donated by Euclid Beverage worth $500, and we also got other goodies and giveaways to hand out throughout the night, so come hang out with us. The NFL Draft this Thursday night, you're definitely not going to want to miss it. Coming up on this pod, it is going to be basketball game, a bunch of game fives over the last couple days. We have some fun stuff to chat about. We are going to dive into the Bucks Heat the other night, LeBron and the Lakers. We're going to break down some eulogies as two more teams hit the gravesite and their seasons come to an end on this Wednesday night. But one man made sure that it was not 3 for 3, and we're going to talk about him as well. All of that and more as we inch closer and closer to the end of round one. We finally have, after tonight, we do have our first official round two series set. So we are going to let it fly. This is the Educated Ignorance Podcast with your boy Joe the Show. Let's get it popping. As much as I would love to start with LeBron in year 20, just dominating in the late stages of fourth quarter and OT, and just kind of carrying the Lakers to a win with immaculate execution, I can't start there, because on Monday night we had one of, and I know it's easy to be hyperbolic about this, but we saw one of the greatest playoff performances in the history of the NBA on Monday night with Jimmy Butler. Dominated, 56 points. He had 22 in the first quarter. He had their last 20 and just kind of waited out the middle stages of the game, and then outscored the Bucks by himself in the final 4 minutes, 20-13. I think he ended up with, 35. He had 21, I think, in the 22 in the fourth quarter. So, like, what he did in all was just incredible. And there are some layers to this game, and I don't think the Bucks are out of it yet. But I want to get to everything first. Let's start obviously with Jimmy, and the Jimmy Butler roller coaster ride. It's not like it's a bad one. It's just been a weird one and an interesting one. You look at where he came from, second round draft pick, and making his headway with the Chicago Bulls. And from there, you know, he arises on the scene. He becomes this really good second option at the time with Derrick Rose, who was, while Derrick Rose still had another year or so left of MVP level play, you know, to that degree before injuries finally made him have to tap out. I mean, him and Butler were really good co 1A, 1B type of guys in the year that they were. I mean, listen, in 2015, they led the Cavs in the second round 2-1 before they were about to go up 3-1 before LeBron hit that corner jump shot in game four in Chicago to put them to tie the series and save the Cavs on their way, the Cavs way to the finals before losing in 2015 to Golden State. So Chicago obviously had their moments and they didn't want to pay Jimmy for some reason and it didn't work out. He gets traded to Minnesota and they were good. At one point they were the 3 seed and then he gets hurt. They fall to the 8s and they get blitzed in round one by Houston in 2018. And the him just going at Wiggins and Towns in those practices, we all know the stories, and he gets shipped out of there. He gets saved by going to Philly, and they have a team to win a championship, and they might have won the championship in 2019 if it wasn't for Kawhi Leonard, the corner three that hits every part of the rim, and Joel Embiid and Jimmy Butler both not get robbed of a championship, but they were probably the best team in the tournament overall, and they just got it was them in the Raptors, obviously, when it all came down to it, but they were inches away from getting to the conference finals, and I think they would have done what the Raptors did to Milwaukee, and it was the Jimmy Butler, you know, it just falls away from him. But then in 2020, he goes to Miami, and then all of a sudden in the bubble, has these legendary, legendary performances. Think of, they sweep the Pacers in round one. Nothing too memorable there, but they go up 3-0 on the Bucks, the one-seeded Bucks with the back-to-back MVP winner. He goes off in game 1 and 3. They lead the series 3-0. They close it out in 5. In the conference finals against the Celtics, obviously Tyler Hero had some big moments, but he had some big moments as well. And then in the finals, of course, in games 3 and 5, he went toe-to-toe with LeBron James, the last true peak of his powers, I'm still the best player in the world level LeBron James season, in the bubble, in the finals, in game 3, had a 40-point triple-double, and in game 5, went literally shot for shot with LeBron in the fourth quarter while LeBron was trying to capture a championship, and Jimmy Butler, I think, finished with 35, near triple-double, and had 5 steals as well. Jimmy Butler went literally shot for shot with LeBron James down the stretch of a finals game and fended off the Lakers before they obviously bowed out in 6. 2021, the Heat gets swept by the Bucks. 2022, though, they're the 1 seed, and playoff Jimmy comes strolling back in, and it's just another epic catalog of playoff performances. In round one against the Hawks, he doesn't have too many just all-in-all bangers, but they get the job done. In round two against the Sixers, multiple times, including game five and game six, he was dominant and absolutely shut it down and en route to the conference finals when he has an amazing game one of over 40. And, of course, I don't know before this game, I don't know. I would probably argue game 3 and 5 of the finals in 2020 were his coup de grace, were his all-timer moments. But game 6 in Boston, that series went back and forth last year. Heat win game 1, Celtics dominate in game 2. Heat come out and roll surprisingly in game 3. Celtics blow them out in game 4. It's a tight, ugly rock fight in game 5. And then the Celtics pull away in the end of the third and the start of the fourth, going home to Boston, and Miami plays amazing, and Jimmy Butler goes insane. I think he finished with 47 or 49. He was incredible in that game, and it took them back home to game seven for Miami when he was great again. He had 35 and he had a three-pointer at the gun that if he would have hit it, would have sent them to the finals. And then this year, this is a train wreck season for the Heat. But, you know, they have their moments. Jimmy Butler has some moments as well. They end up losing. Like, the craziest part about all of this, what, 2 weeks ago, I think today, they lost to the Hawks in the 7-8 game, and they got beat up really bad. They got killed on the glass. They just got dominated. The offense looked bad. They were down one with 3 minutes left to Chicago in the 8-10. Well, eventually was the 8-seed play-in game. And then they go on that crazy run down the stretch to win. The fact that they were that close to not getting in, and they looked bad. And I thought this team was going to be a doormat in round one. Now, a little bit of fortune. Milwaukee gets hurt. Giannis gets hurt in game one. Butler goes off 35 plus in game one, dominates and the Bucks and the Heat roll. They just absolutely roll in game one. They keep the Bucks at arm's length the entire game. In game two, obviously the Bucks have their moment. They score 150 points. But in game three, swing game, this is what I was trying to get at the other night when it was a little portion in the middle of the show, but this is what I was trying to get at when I was saying these are the type of get too cute moments that you can't afford in the playoffs. And the Bucks just got a little too cute. They held out Giannis for an extra game, and in game three, Jimmy goes off again. He has 30. I think he had like 28 or 20, like he had like 22 or 24 in the first half. And they shot insanely well from three in that game, or at least efficient enough to win that game. I'm trying to pull up the stats. They hit 16 threes, so for them, that's obviously really good. Duncan Robinson went off in that game, and they ended up winning. They won by 22. And then in this game, so look, we get the Jimmy game, and this is a game where for Milwaukee, you can't lose. Giannis comes back. They play really well. Brook goes insane. Giannis has a fantastic floor game with 13 assists and was making a lot of right decisions. And we'll get to some more Milwaukee stuff in a moment, but I just want to mention how this Miami team, and even in this game, they didn't really shoot the cover off the ball in this game like they did for for them in games one and three. This was for all intents and purposes, one man who is an all-time player. That is what he is. And I think people put the cart before the horse sometimes with some of this stuff. And sometimes we also we get lost in who we want to crown and who we should crown and who we shouldn't crown. But we're at this point now where we're literally at five out of 6 years where he's carrying teams or having these playoff moments. He's one of the greatest of all time, man. Like, when we do lists of top 100 players of all time, top 100 and whatever, it would take a title for him to really flirt with some all-time great shit, but, like, when you just look in the league right now, in the playoffs, he's obviously been the best player. Outside, I mean, him and one other guy, and we'll talk about him in a little bit with Phoenix, who's been great. But outside of him, you'll probably maybe name five guys, if that if it's our do or die moment. At this point, we're at this do or die game. Who do I want to be my alpha? He's on the shortest of lists. I'd take Giannis. I would probably take, if we're just going to go with guys that are in the playoffs right now, Booker or Durant maybe too. He's right up there. And what he did in this game, 56 points, the domination, the will to win, the effort, all of it, it's insane. And we can't give him enough praise. What he did Monday night was spectacular. It was one of the greatest games I've ever seen in my life. It was jaw-dropping. I know it's round one. I mean, even guys in that uniform have had better games. But that was just the way he took the game over in the last 4 minutes. They had no fucking business winning, and they did. It was incredible. Other stuff about this series and this game, and so far, that was just impressive for the Heat. They have had moments where they've had guys hit shots. You have Caleb Martin in that fourth quarter. Someone else had to hit some timely baskets. He had two free throws on a nice drive. He had the corner jumper where his foot was on the line, and then he hit a three. So what is that? 7 points. Pretty big. He had the only other points outside of Jimmy down the stretch. Impressive. Like, they needed it. They needed that. That was really, really impressive, him to be able to hit those timely baskets, and he's hit some timely ones in the entire series. Duncan Robinson, it is nice to see you again. He was big in game three. He was huge, and Spoelstra, obviously, without Tyler Hero, just has to – they have to go to an obligatory white guy. I'm kidding, but they have to go to somebody who can you can really rely on to shoot, and he's got his confidence at least to be able to play out there. Look, he was out there playing clutch minutes in game four, and Kevin Love – there's some interesting stuff with that we gloss over with the Cavs and the Knicks. And Bill Simmons has been hammering this point. The Cavs just let that guy walk. And he was big in game three. He wasn't great in game four. But again, they have enough guys to a degree where you can hope. If Jimmy's on it, you just got to hope that one of them can carry some weight. I love Kyle Lowry, always have, always will. Sometimes lately over the last year or so, he has really gotten on my nerves, but this was vintage. This was a vintage Kyle Lowry game. The effort, the smart plays, the intuitiveness, the defensive timely moments. He had three fucking insanely massive stops in this game. There was one with about 2 minutes left, right when the Heat were starting to get going. It's late shot clock, and Giroux's backing him down, and Kyle Lowry just fucking rips him. They cut it to one. It was after the Caleb Martin corner shot. Milwaukee's walking the ball up. They're going to call timeout, and Lowry blows it up at half court, knocks it away. Butler gets a dunk to give them the lead. The fucking building is literally melting. And then late fourth quarter, I think they're up a possession, or they're up like three or four. Holiday drives, bumps into Lowry. Holiday loses the ball. They get a steal. So those are timely defensive plays from Kyle Lowry. On the other side, Middleton and Giroux have not been good enough in the last few games, and they just got to be better. And I'm interested to see defensively how they change things up. Are they just going to try, like, do you just, like, here's the thing. Butler, there's some creative stuff to a degree. Creative is a very broad way of putting it. It's not that, like, insanely X's and O's creative. It's just witty kind of gaming the system stuff with how they run their pick and roll and how they get Jimmy the ball into advantageous positions. But I'm going to be interested to see in game five, do the Bucks just fucking blitz the shit out of him and force other guys to beat you? Because he's being guarded by Middleton and Giroux almost the entire game. And Middleton's a good defender with length, and Giroux is one of the three best defensive players that breathes on this planet. He just fucking is. And Jimmy's lighting their ass like a joint in a Miami strip club. That's what he's doing. That has to be something that Budenholzer has to figure out. But one of the creative things that the Heat are doing, had him having a moment here. Oh, sorry about that. So one of the impressive things that they're doing, they get into these, it's right on the fucking fringes of illegal screens, but they're doing a good job of, you know, it's guard to guard stuff. So it's just kind of action where you can't really just leave Kyle Lowry wide open. They would do it with Duncan Robinson at times too. You could also pull this stuff off with Kevin Love. And offensively, what they're doing is giving Jimmy Butler screens and then rescreens and doing enough to where he can get openings to go downhill. Now, how does Milwaukee adjust to that? We'll see. I'm going to be very interested to see that. Defensively, they've done a good job. In the last game, they put Bam on Giannis. Brooke went off, but that's because they were, I mean, they're so undersized. Even, like, they have Bam, but outside of him, they don't have anybody that's big on their roster, really, outside of K-Love, and he's not doing much. So it's a lot of live and die by what you do. The question is going to be, I think the Bucks are going to win Game 5 and probably very handedly, because I think Jimmy, you know, he does sometimes struggle coming off of these really big games. And I think this is just going to be a moment where Milwaukee's desperate and they're just going to dominate. And Game 6 is obviously going to be the one. I think Jimmy will go for the throat. Game 6 is going to be Friday, I believe. Friday night. If all works out, let's see. It should be Friday. It'd be Friday. We'll have at least one Game 6, Kings Warriors. Two Game 6s, Bucks Heat. Three Cavs Knicks. I think the Cavs should win Game 5. Maybe four if the Lakers get beat by Memphis. But regardless, that's appointment television on Friday, man. Because that Bucks Heat game will be on the road, pressure, one seed trying to not lose to an eight seed. Giannis will be full-fledged. Butler and Jimmy Butler in Game 6 will try to go for the fucking head. So Game 6 will be appointment television. I think the Bucks. Now, listen, clip this for Old Takes Exposed or whatever if I get this wrong, but I think the Bucks will dominate Game 5. The question's going to be, can Miami be consistent enough from three in one of these final games? If they get that and a combined off night from Middleton and Drew where they have been struggling, then Miami can do it. Miami can do it. I think the Bucks win comfortably in Game 5. Game 6 is the appointment television because it will be Giannis and Jimmy. Giannis trying to save the season and Jimmy trying to take out a fucking giant in Game 6. That will be fun. That will be a doozy. We will have some stuff on Game 5 from Lakers Memphis a little bit after a word from the host of our draft show on Thursday, Kavanaugh's.
Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island.
It was a reassuring performance from the Lakers in a sense in some aspects on third. Not that, I mean, they are coming off dominating in the first quarter of Game 3, but Game 4 was a war. And I feel like people, a lot of people, why did I put these as Game 5s? These were Game 4s. I'm a dumbass. I think a lot of people were expecting the Grizzlies to just fold. I don't think I was, but I mean, listen, they were going to definitely come out and play better in Game 4 than they did to start Game 3. That's absolutely for certain. And they gave the Lakers everything they could handle. Ja played well. Desmond Bane had the best game of the series. He was dialed in. Jaren Jackson is a fucking menace. But at the end of the day, Memphis just doesn't have enough guys. And I think there's an organizational dump that we're going to be able to take on Memphis when we do, you know, when they eventually go out and we do the eulogy. But I want to save that. I want to talk about some Lakers stuff here. I think Game 4 showed LeBron doing a very good job of picking his spots. The shot at the end of the game to tie it was nice to know, like there's moments where sometimes he's settling too much from his jump shot and he can't hit water if he fell out of a boat right now. But it was nice to see him when they needed it, they gave the ball to six. They got out of the way, and he put his fucking head down and got to the rim. And that finish, man, to get by Tillman and then to go over Jaren Jackson, who literally just blocked him, that sprung what should have been the game-winning layup with 7 seconds left. he put that perfectly over him. They got the shot off the glass to fall. And then in overtime, he had a couple moments where I want to pull up the overtime play-by-play here. He had some moments where he was just kind of standing around, and I didn't like that. Now, granted, he was probably fucking gassed. I get it. And Memphis's offense, I wouldn't say they were lucky, but the Memphis offense just died in the OT. They couldn't generate shit. let me pull up overtime here. So the first basket was the weird fucking AD play where LeBron, the only turnover of the night, it was a bad fucking decision. He threw he had someone on the wing, but instead he went to Schroeder inside and Ja tipped it. And it went down, and Schroeder fell, and then Ja tried to bring it up, and he either lost it or he kicked it off his shin or, like, off his heel, and Schroeder dug it out, got it to AD, who laid it in. And then LeBron had another driving layup to make it a four-point game. At that point, I'm like, all right, just give the fucking ball to LeBron and get out of the way. But he was passing stuff up. He ended up giving the ball to Schroeder to run a lot of him and AD pick and rolls. But then it gets down to it. They're up five. They're up three. They go back and forth. With 30 seconds left, he takes Dylan Brooks to the cup and one, which sealed the deal. So it shows, like, when they need it, he will put his head down and go. That was nice to see. And I do think, again, what these games have been showing are consistent depth from the Lakers, to where you can almost guarantee that there's balance, or at least somebody could have it just going. In game one, it was Rui had it going, and it helped them kind of dig back into the game when they weren't playing great, and then Reeves closed. In game three, it was a bit of balance. It was everybody, and it was AD just dominating all around, Rui hitting some shots when he comes in, Reeves hitting some big, doing some stuff. In this game, you have more balance. It's Austin Reeves who led the game in scoring, and he just was consistent throughout the night. AD played horrific. D'Angelo Russell was not good, and then all of a sudden hits three straight three-pointers to take him from down seven to up two. So you just have these little moments, and then you can obviously go with what you need to close. And another example is Dennis Schroeder hitting some big shots in the play-in game. So in four Laker wins in the playoffs so far, the three in the series and the one in the play-in, it's been a little, you know, potpourri, poopoo platter, as some would say. It's been a little bit of everything. The balance has been key, and they're going to need that, obviously, to win 13 more games and to win a championship, which I think they can do. I just feel like that balance and that what the additions they've made, those things are key. Obviously, though, they'll need a better game from AD, and I'm hoping that in the string of the AD roulette wheel, first off, hope he's okay. He looked like he was dealing with some just nagging stuff. Hopefully game five, he comes out and he fucking dominates. They shut it down and they can rest to the weekend, because they'll at least have until early next week, because Warriors and they'll at least have until Sunday to wait for the Warriors Kings series, because that will at least play until Friday. So can't wait, baby. There's a chance that Sunday we get Warriors Lakers game one. I know the Fox injury stuff, it hurts my soul. It should be Kings Lakers, but I just don't want to talk about it. I'll be depressed. The Warriors fucking ruined my life. I'm so fucking sad when it comes to those dudes. I hate them. I despise the Warriors so much, and the De'Aaron Fox stuff just breaks my heart. So hopefully he can play. But yeah, Sunday we should potentially. We're gonna get Kings or Lake Warriors Lakers. The Lakers mop up on Wednesday, and then hopefully the Kings win two straight. or the Warriors went too straight. Sunday we'll probably get game one, or Monday or Tuesday, we'll see. All right, moving on. Okay, we've got some eulogies we're going to get to. We have two of them. Or no. Let's actually, I lied. I want to give a shout out to the Hawks. Bad night for me. I was going to come on here and beat my chest, say, man, I feel good about my Boston Celtics title pick. Shout out to Trae Young. This was a we can't take these moments for granted, because we're not sure how many of them we're going to get left. We're going to have left of these here while he's playing for the Hawks. This was a vintage, even though it's crazy to say that for a guy as young as he is. He's had multiple games like this. This was a vintage Ice Trae closeout performance. What he did, the ability to finish down the stretch. There's some stuff I didn't like with Boston, but Trae emptied the clip, and Boston was too casual tonight in spots. Jaylen Brown, I thought, was terrific, but they were too casual in spots, and Atlanta just hung around to enough, and then Trae Young went for the throat, and that's what he does. And he kind of stole game one, or excuse me, he kind of stole game three, but they as a whole shot that well. This was his game. He stole game five. You knew he was going to have one of them, and it was cool to see him do it in the Garden. It was cool to see him do it in Boston Garden, just to have that moment. I think Trae Young is one of the best. I don't think he's a villain, but he's a heel. He is a heel when it comes to this stuff, which I guess is villain. So I love Trae Young to a degree. There's some stuff with him I really don't like, but just the persona and when he's on and how he acts on the court, I don't mind any of that. I actually really like it. Just the some of his decision making and his the way he shuts people out, and there's some intangible stuff with him that bugs me sometimes. But outside of that, I really, really do like him. And it was fun to see him have that moment. He didn't play great. He shot inefficiently, but without DeJounte Murray, he had to go for it, and he did. And what he did to close that game was just marvelous. So I have to give it up for Trae. That was very impressive. Tip of the cap, one of the most entertaining players in the league, man. And that was – he shut that shit down. And game six, this is just one of those unfortunate situations for Boston. I think they dominate in game six. I really do. But it's just like, damn, we got to get on a plane and got to go to Atlanta if you're Boston. That's just one of those situations. So a bit unfortunate, but all right. Now let's say our prayers for some teams here tonight. It is our first of two eulogies. They're both very sad. We are now at three. Yeah, we're at three in the playoffs. The Hawks survived the chopping block. All things considered, there's going to be some TikTok only eulogies. Follow us on TikTok, by the way, for Fantasy Sake QC. Probably this week, because with all the draft content stuff, I'm not recording tomorrow. I'm not going to record when I come back Thursday. If Friday night's banging, if we get like three or four game sixes and Danny's with me and he stays up with me all night and we're rocking, I might do a pod. I might do a Friday nighter. I'll be lit, because who knows? We could get four game sixes on Friday. So we'll see. We're going to have to see how that works. But we don't have any at the moment. But we'll see if we can get to four. I hope we get three at least, because I would love for the Lakers to finish the job. But we'll see. Anywho, the first one of the night is the Minnesota Timberwolves. This team as a whole, it's been a layered disaster. Last year, they played well against Memphis in round one. They did. You have to tip your cap. You have to give them their kudos for how they played. And if it wasn't for just some silly shit, they probably could have beat them. They had them on the ropes. But they had dumb moments. They're just a very, very low IQ basketball team. And none of that improved. And in the offseason, they get new owners and they, as they assessed their organization and they thought they were in a different class than they were, and they sold the farm for Rudy Gobert. Bad decision. There was parts of me that was like, man, maybe it could work. It had no fucking chance of working. It never worked all year. Carl Towns gets hurt. I went all out on him the other day. He's not worth my breath at this point. He's a loser. He's a losing player. You already know how I feel about that guy. Rudy Gobert, too. Like, this game was the perfect instance of just Carl Anthony Towns dumb fouls where he racks them up in short order, dumb shot on the other end. He fouls out, and then Rudy Gobert, off a missed shot, fucking flops instead of going for a defensive rebound. Because of that, it comes down quickly. Jokic gets hacked by Towns for the and one, and that is how Towns fouls out. So congratulations, Timberwolves. You're stuck with those two losers forever. Listen, they have a generational player in Anthony Edwards. They just do. Edwards is phenomenal, phenomenal player. And again, I said it the other night, I think he is going to one day be one of the five best players in the league. He showed again, like we were wondering, like, oh shit, that was a bad game against the Lakers. But he had multiple games in the series where he was amazing, and he saved their ass in game four. Tonight he was all right. I think that this, listen, I wish they, I ragged old Gobert. I would probably keep, you obviously have to keep him because no one's going to trade for him. Get what you can for Carl Towns. If you can fleece the shit out of somebody for him, do it. I think the culture actually in that room isn't, they had the moment where Rudy punched Kyle Anderson and Jalen McDaniels goes off the wall. And Jaden McDaniels, excuse me, goes off the wall and punches the wall. So you just, it's mind boggling how you get that. But I do think their culture is strong, as crazy as it sounds to say that. They went through a lot of shit this year and they played through it, and they played through the cat injury. And, you know, then Naz Reid gets hurt late in the season. Naz Reid had an amazing year. He's why I would like contemplate trading Towns easily. Naz Reid is sensational. They've got some okay pieces. If you can trade Towns and get something decent, which I think some needy team will give something of value away for him, because other GMs are dumbasses. look, the counting stats with Towns are there. There's no denying that. But I watch him on a basketball floor in games that matter, and he's a fucking loser. He's a bum. He's a loser. I don't want him anywhere close to my team. So when the Magic trade for him this summer, I'm going to fucking shoot myself in the head. But regardless, please don't do that, Magic. I love you. Trade for Dame Lillard. There we go. Championship. Fuck, even trade for... don't do that. Trade for Dame Lillard. listen, man. They're close to being a little bit better. And Edwards is great. And when they'll be able to replace teams like the Warriors or the Clippers, I guess, because the Clippers are going to kind of fall off. Who knows what the fuck's going to happen with them? We're going to get to them in a minute. They're going to be able to fill some holes in the West where teams fall out, but because they've got, again, one of the future five best guys in the league. And they've got some nice pieces. I really like Jaden McDaniels. He's an all-star caliber guy. Conley, I forgot about him. You got him for another. I think they're going to, like, they'll probably, I don't know if he's up or not, but you bring him back. And he's a really good point guard. He makes everything fit. And Naz Reid coming off injury, I think he's a really, really good piece. So I think they're tough. I do. I think they have some tough caliber stuff, but they have too many losers on the team. They have too many guys that don't understand what it takes when it matters. Mainly 32 and 27. I'd be okay. I'm okay with keeping 27. It's just, it's tough. You have no other fucking choice, honestly. But all in all, again, this organization in the summer thought they were closer than they were. And They traded some fucking valuable assets, man, for a guy who just isn't, you know, he's not nearly worth that. It's one of the worst trades ever. And it's hard to come back from that. But luckily, in the Wolves' case, they have one of, again, the best players in the league, soon to be, already is, and Anthony Edwards. So that's my take on them. It's not pretty, but it's just kind of where you got to go. Like off-season stuff, you probably want to get. You hope that Jaden McDaniels can take that step as like a legitimate number two scoring option. He's obviously a fantastic defender. And then if you could upgrade and get another wing, you know, you trade Cat and somehow get a wing back, man, there you go. Off to the races, maybe. Ant takes that jump. And then, like, to all NBA level. And then you're in a spot where you could be a top four seed next year, you know? They've got that kind of, they got some gusto, man. They do have some gusto. So we'll see. Well, I'm interested to see what they do. I really think they should trade Towns, and that's obviously, you know, I made a 2-minute rant on him that's blown up on TikTok the other day, but he's just a losing player. You can't win with a guy like that. So obviously that's the main reason you move him, but among other things, I think someone would be over desperate to get a guy like that. So I would try to take advantage of that and see what happens. Okay. Next, the Los Angeles Clippers lied to rest. This is just depressing. I picked the Clippers in the preseason to win the title. I thought this was going to be Kawhi's year. I thought this was going to be the Clippers' year. I thought Paul George was going to continue his just blossoming of all of these great playoff moments after he had a crazy repertoire of horrendous playoff moments. I mean, I'll never forget watching what he did in 2021, just carrying the Clippers through the finale of the Jazz series after Kawhi got hurt, and he was great. Even though they lost against Phoenix, all fucking six of those games, Paul George was sensational in. And listen, this is a at the end of the day, this is a cursed franchise, man. They make the right moves. They go out of their way to make the right moves to get Paul George and Kawhi. Well, I understand they traded Shea, who's now a current top 10 or 12 guy in the league, but like, it's a trade you make, shit happens. You hit on draft picks, man. You hit on draft picks like a Terrence Mann. Those, like, You fleece in a deal to get a guy like Ivica Zubac. You fucking land Norman Powell and Robert Covington in a deal that for no fucking reason. And Powell is sensational. You go out of your way. You get Nick Batum and you like just all of a sudden reinvigorate a lost career, and he's like an actual decent player, even though this year he wasn't bad, you know, fourth quarter screaming, why the fuck Batum in and all that. You go out and get Russell Westbrook and everyone's saying it's a disaster, 5-1 fire. Lo and behold, he's actually fucking amazing. He was bad in this game, but all that aside, as an organization, they make every right decision and they're not rewarded for it. It sucks, man. It sucks. And I'm not a Clipper fan, obviously, but I'm someone who respects when organizations do the right things and make the right decisions. And listen, I know they disrespected the regular season with the load management shit and whatnot. But as an organization, they do the right things. They make the right decisions. They employ the right people. Ty Lue's a fantastic coach, one of the best in the league. I'd probably say top two or three coach in the NBA. He makes the right decisions. He pushes the right buttons. He got Russell Westbrook to be an all-level, like an all-NBA-level defender. in this game, in this series, and just impacting games and more than just scoring and box score stats. Their depth is great. They have the right guys, but at the end of the day, the Paul George injury was bad luck in that Thunder game. Kawhi, who fucking knows with him? It's a mess, and again, I feel bad for them. I feel so bad for the Clippers, man, because they make every right decision, but this is where they end up. We all got our jokes off with the 3-1 thing. We did. When they lose to the Nuggets, they deserved that to a degree. But 2021, they handled it right. They beat the Mavs. Kawhi's playing great. He blows his knee out on a weird, funky play. They probably would have won the title. All respect to Giannis. The Clippers probably would have won the title in 2021. Last year, Kawhi doesn't play all season because of the knee. Weird, weird stuff chemistry-wise with why he's not with the team and all of this shit. And then Paul George plays great, has a weird elbow injury, comes back, plays sensational, drags them to the 7th spot or to the 8th seed. They kind of choke a game away against Minnesota. Okay, whatever. They'll win the next game. They'll be the 8th seed. And goddamn, that's a brutal matchup for the Suns in round one. Nope. Paul George gets COVID. Doesn't play. Pelicans beat him. Like, what the fuck? It's just Kawhi came back and was dominant from early February or mid-January through the end of the season, through games 1 and 2 of the playoffs, and then done. It's just another fucking horrendous break for a team that has really made, again, I respect organizations that make the right decisions, that do the right things. And they've done that. They've hit every right button over the last 3 years, 4 years, but they can't catch a fucking break, man. It's real. It's sad. It's so sad. I don't know what you do now. Do you trade Kawhi? You can't keep doing this. And the crazy thing is they extended him. That's the one thing. They extended him in September. That's the one button they missed on. Why would you do that? Why would you extend this marriage? I know, listen, they're trying to break off from the Lakers they're trying to get out of Staples or crypto. They're building their own arena in Inglewood. I understand that you need the Compton kid in Kawhi to be there when you do that. But man, they've hogtied themselves to a fucking nuclear warhead. And if the NBA was a simulation with injuries turned off, this team would win the title this year. Even where they're at right now, they'd fucking roll through the West. They play Boston, Milwaukee, or Philly in the finals. Be a fun, entertaining series, and they'd beat them. You can't convince me otherwise. I watched game one. I watched what they did without Paul George. Russ shot terrible. I watched game two. They hung around. Suns just made tough shots. I watched game three and four. And then tonight, even, without Paul George or Kawhi, and all of those role players hitting shots, being tough as shit, defending to a degree as best they can against fucking killers on the other end of the floor. It's not fair, man. At the end of the day, it's not fair. So I feel bad for him. I do. Call me something dumb, but I feel bad for him. And we'll see what happens. I'm very interested to see what the next path is for the Clippers, because it's an interesting one, that's for sure. All right, we'll take a break and get out of here.
By Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island.
All right, so check us out on TikTok for Fantasy Sake QC. I'm going to do a Nuggets Suns preview on there probably by Friday. Check us out Thursday, my Facebook, the For Frequency Sake Pace Facebook page, and then our Twitter as well is where we're going to be on live for the draft show. Or if you're a cool dude, come to Kavanaugh's, enjoy everything, food, drinks, hang out with us, watch the draft, get enter to win some prizes, take home a fucking $500 grill for free, you know, all that stuff. We'll have all that. It's going to be great. Can't wait. Thursday is going to be a blast. I'm fucking stoked. Next time we'll record, maybe Friday. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how Friday goes. If we get three or four game sixes, man, I might have to. I might have to. And then check a lot of the content for the NBA stuff, though, coming up throughout the weekend is going to be TikTok. I want to boost some stuff on there. I'm going to do some series previews, some maybe some slight game reactions, depending on what happens. We'll see. For Fantasy Sake QC on TikTok. Follow us, like us, share us, tell all your friends. Anywho, this has been the Educated Ignorance Podcast. As always, I'm Joe Winkle. Thank you all for listening. As always, if you ain't got your game, you best pass the sticks. We will see you guys at worst Sunday. Actually, I lied. We'll see you Thursday for the draft. Love you all. We're out. Peace.